Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to another edition of Fighting Words on Fighting Words News Network. Fighting Words is brought to you each and every night of the week in grateful appreciation of the men and women of the United States Armed Forces and the men and women of Police and Fire Services. When you're out there and you see somebody in a uniform, please acknowledge them. These are very tough times for both domestic and in foreign lands for all the men and women in uniform. Tonight's program is dedicated to a young man, the first ever deputy sheriff in Broward County, to die of COVID-19 in the line of duty. Sean Bennett was a 12-year veteran, a father, and a husband. He was a tremendous guy, a tremendous person. I've had the chance to interact with him in the CIT unit, and he was just a pleasant person to be around. So to him and to his wife and his children, we sent our deepest condolences. Please, when you're out there, if you have to go out, please wear a mask. We don't want to lose any more listeners. If you're sequestered, I know it's tough. The cabin fever's got me so bad that I don't know what the hell to do sometimes, but please stay off the road, stay in the house if you can, and don't take a chance, especially anyone over the age of 60. Don't take a chance of trying to beat it on your own. Well, guys, it's been a quiet week, you know, with no fights out there, but I got something for you, Chris. Victor Postel was going to fight Jose Ramirez on May 9th, and that's been pushed back. What's your thoughts on that fight? Chris? Chris, you there? I know he's there. Oh, no. Ty?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay, let me ask you the same question. Let me ask you the same question. Ramirez Postel, what's your thoughts on that one?
Well, when that fight is finally allowed to come off, I got to favor Ramirez just being the fresher, younger gun. Victor Postel is a great guy. Obviously, he really arrived on the scene when he took Lucas Matisse out several years ago. And that kind of established his reputation. Since then, he's only lost to Terrence Crawford and to Josh Taylor, who, you know, Josh Taylor just beat Reese Prograis for the W Super Series championship. So Victor Postel is a quality operator. Just compared to Jose Ramirez, he is a little longer in the tooth. I expect him to have good success throughout that fight, but I expect Ramirez to edge him just based on activity. Ramirez outworked because he's just a young guy who presses forward.
Sorry, fans. We're undergoing some technical difficulties. I don't know. I just always wanted to say that.
Who's on? Are we on? Hello?
Yeah, we are on.
Okay. I'm sorry. Something happened that they shorted Dr. Chris out, so I had to get him back on. But, Chris, we're talking about Ramirez and Postel. They were supposed to fight on May 9th, but it's been postponed. Do you have any thoughts on that fight? Ty was just talking about it.
Postel.
Mm-hmm.
You know what? I saw him before. I've seen him before, but I really don't have an opinion much on him. I haven't seen him that often. I'll let the other guys talk, and I'll listen a little bit. And I'll bring back some memories.
Okay. Well,
what weight division is that, Frank?
That is junior welterweight, 140. That's 140. Victor Postel's a guy he's a guy who fought Matisse, Lucas Matisse, a few years back when Matisse was, doing pretty well in the division, obviously. And he caught him with a counter step back right hand, knocked Matisse out.
Okay. I got it.
Yeah. Hey,
they're rerunning all the old fights on television. I'm watching all reruns of the MMA all the way back in I call it the quadrangle when it first started.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I remember.
All the bloodbaths are on. I saw a trilogy on Marquez and the super bantamweight when they were 122. Two fights, I mean, it was... I felt bad for both of them. They're both getting murdered. Both were bleeding from everywhere.
Marquez,
did some amazing fights on.
Yes, Rafael Marquez and Israel Vasquez. Yes, that was
Marquez and Marquez. What a bloodbath!
Yeah.
Oh my God! What a trilogy! The time it was done, the other Vasquez was done. Marquez went on, got bigger and got better, but poor Vasquez. He retired to the plastic surgeon. Man. I'm going to retire in Mexico and teach defensive boxing. They'll run me out of there on a railroad car. And then I'll starve to death. I wouldn't make a nickel a week. Nobody wants to know how to block a punch down here, other than use their face. You know? If I see one more closed left eye from right hand landing right, they square up, carry their left hand low so they can hook to the body, and they get their face smashed in. By the 10th round, it looks like, they look horrible. They can't see. They can't. I watched that little Englishman at 122 beat this big Mexican. Beautiful boxer. His name was Ward. Beautiful boxer. Good left hook. Little old pasty Englishman. Skin white as a ghost. He hadn't been out in the sun in about 10 years. And he gave that Mexican a shellacking. So, I've enjoyed. What else is on TV? Reruns of the Super Bowl, reruns of this, reruns of that. I'm losing patience up here. Jesus, God. Yeah, they're canceling all the golf tournaments, baseball, everything, basketball, Christ. They just had a big thing on Fox on the mental side of this whole thing. How many people are, cracking up, getting crazy? Spousal abuse in the house,
I expect suicide rates to go up as well.
A lot of bad things are going to come in it.
My dog gets up in the morning and keeps looking. She says, when the hell are you going out?
My son called me right before the show. He says, my dog's bored. You want to take a ride? I said, no, I got to do the show. How about you? You're not bored. The dog's bored.
Hey, Ty, we got a have a fight scheduled for July 11th. Manny Pacquiao and Mikey Garcia. What's your thoughts on that one?
I favor
mine
again.
Go ahead.
No, go ahead, Dr. Chris. It's fine.
I think Mikey Garcia is going to get his face tattooed. I mean, he's going to get plastered. He's too slow. He's too slow and rigid. He doesn't have enough body movement to avoid Pacquiao's jab and that straight left hand of his. I think it's going to be a one-sided fight. I don't think Pacquiao will knock him out, but I think that he's going to beat the hell out of him. Plain English. No other word for it. I just think Mikey Garcia is in over his head. And I'm shocked that he's got the fight with all the good potential moneymakers for Pacquiao. Why the hell is he fighting Mikey Garcia?
Yeah.
That's not a moneymaker. I don't know.
Yeah. What do you think, Ty?
What do you guys think?
Well, I think the reason why he's fighting Mikey Garcia is it's not a moneymaker, but he'll make more money with Mikey than say he made with Keith Thurman. Mikey's name is bigger than Keith Thurman's right now, in general. And Spence obviously is not ready. But here's what you got to look at too. The reason why I picked Mikey is partly because of your prediction. Mikey's a good stylistic matchup for him. Mikey has proven to be an exceptional fighter, but a marginal welterweight. Whereas, Manny Pacquiao is an all-time great fighter, and even at the age of 40, he's still a very good to elite welterweight. So he's a better fighter. And kind of like you said, Dr. Chris, at this point, even in Manny slowed down a little bit, he still has too much frenetic activity for Mikey, who's kind of slow of foot, great timing, but nothing exceptional about Mikey's game. Mikey just does the basics extremely well, follows his fundamentals extremely, extremely well. But he doesn't have, not the quickest, not the biggest puncher specifically at welterweight. And like Dr. Chris said, he's not the quickest either. And so you got to go with Pacquiao to outwork him. And the reason why I would assume Pacquiao would take this fight is because Mikey Garcia is going to pay you as much as probably everybody else, except save for maybe Terrence Crawford or Errol Spence or whatever. But you're going to get just as much to fight Mikey Garcia. And he's less of a threat to say a Danny Garcia, who has some of the similar problems with being slow feet, good timing, but he's a bigger puncher. So I think it's kind of weighing the risk against the reward, with the rewards being equal, Mikey is of lesser risk. So personally, that's why I think, the choice would be Mikey if that fight comes off.
Hmm. All right.
Mikey Garcia fights with his head up in the air. With that big head of his sticking up there, that'd be a bigger target for Gus, for Pacquiao to pound. He doesn't pull his head down. He doesn't set an angle where his shoulder is protecting his jaw at all. And I can see Pacquiao being a left-hander, really nailing him. I would predict a TKO almost as tough as Garcia is. I predict a TKO in that fight. Somebody's face is going to give in. And I think it's going to be Garcia's. I've never seen him hurt or bleeding even, but I think he's going to get tattooed pretty good. So, well, we'll see. When's it coming off? Is it made yet?
Yeah, it's set for July 11th. If they're really able to get back in the ring by then, hopefully it will be.
Yeah, they better. Everybody's
right,
dead broke up here. You know,
yeah.
They got to allow this. It's just a catastrophe what's happened up here. My son had to lay off all his employees. They closed his dental offices down. That's four. He had to close four down. With the four offices, he's got well over 100 employees, and he's only allowed to do emergencies. If you've got a bad toothache, they'll take care of it. But outside of that, it's a $1,000 fine if you let somebody enter your office. Of course, I don't know how the hell they're going to enforce it, But a lot of laws are being made today that they can't enforce anyway. What are you going to do? You can't enforce the law. They make them. It's up to people to obey them, but they're not going to. That's just human nature.
I think what you have to consider, too, about the likelihood. So Canelo's fight has specifically got pushed back. So everything obviously is getting pushed back. But I think what you have to consider about the likelihood of fights that are made right now, a fight that is made for July, with the restrictions in place, even if restrictions are starting to be eased back, there's no guarantee that restrictions will be completely removed by the time a fight comes off. So even if restrictions are eased back to some of the states, they still may have a very strong limit on gatherings of over 10 or 20 people. So, when we're talking about a fight in July, even if that fight's allowed to happen, there's still a potential that fight could be behind closed doors. Promoters lose the live gate money, so you don't know if they want to do that. The other thing you got to consider, too, and this is for any sports, is training. Because, gyms are closed. So, obviously, you're talking about a Pacquiao, Mikey Garcia. They could, they could go and train in their private gyms or, close the Big Bear up to just that particular person. So, but you still got training partners, seconds. So, there's just, I think it's very optimistic. But reality is that a lot goes more into the fight than the two guys just showing up fighting. With all the training and all the different seconds they have to come in contact with, just nothing is certain. In July, even though July is still, a few months away, it's really right around the corner when you look at the, the totality of what the world is dealing with right now. So, and then what you got to consider, where's Manny Pacquiao? Is Manny Pacquiao in the Philippines? And if he's in the Philippines, when will he be allowed to leave? So, you got all that's going on.
Right.
So.
Right. Hey, Bob, you're up on this one. We've gotten a couple emails requesting information. Evidently, there was a leak to the press that Masvidal turned down a fight with Usman. Do you have any idea why he turned that down?
Yeah, I do. A lot of it ties together, though, with what's going on with the UFC and everything, and no one being able to fight or compete right now, all that kind of stuff. In response to Usman calling out, there. Okay, so let me back up. So UFC 249 is still planning. You know, Dana White still plans. He wants to go forward with that. And there's a lot of, you know, because of the coronavirus and everything being shut down, all this other stuff. Everyone's unsure if that's going to happen. Now, with that, headlining would have been Khabib and stuff like that. Well, now Khabib has recently come out and he's locked down in Russia. There's no way for him to get over here. So he's out. So in a sense, so Usman, you know, who has been called Snoozman by Colby Covington for his boring style. You know, his last fight was against Colby Covington. So Usman said he called Dana out to say, you know, I'll save the UFC 249, and then called out Masvidal in order to headline, you know, save the fight per se, because Khabib's out. That's just Usman, again, trying to jump on the money train. I've got thoughts on that. But so he's trying to get something started to make some money or to keep the fights going while everything's still shutting down. Because Dana White's still talking about moving forward with his next event sooner than any other sport and all of that. So Usman's kind of making a call out. Now, as far as response to Usman calling out Masvidal's manager, Masvidal doesn't turn down fights. Masvidal's manager is like, hey, put the right amount of money in front of us, we'll jump in the cage. It's not anything about anything as far as the camp coming from Masvidal. But if as long as the money's right, guys will fight. And so that's coming back from the camp of Masvidal. Just, hey, we got no problem with it. Just put the money out there. But again, Usman's just trying to start some trouble to gain some promoter or some people to, you know, chatter about it and see if they can make some money on it. And if they can, well, then Dana will try to put it together.
Mm-hmm. You know, Bob, what I think has been kind of corny about the whole situation is, you know, because McGregor is funny, because Conor McGregor came out and, you know, he's really an advocate for the lockdown and, you know, and this, that, and the third. But then he calls Khabib out for having to not being able to fight. That's the way I'm going to term it. He calls Khabib out for not being able to fight, saying, you know, he lost the chicken match to Tony. And then, you know, Usman trying to promote himself and quote-unquote save the day calls Masvidal out. Masvidal doesn't take the fight. He wants to call him chicken. I think it's kind of corny for these guys to accuse each other of ducking at this particular point in time. Fact of the matter is, Khabib, as of literally Thursday, said, hey, in spite of what you heard, basically, I will fight. He said his famous line, send me location. There is still no location, he said. This is unprofessional. I'm the undisputed champ, and I know nothing. He said, so you want me to fly to U.S.? He said, I fly to U.S. What if the fight's not in the U.S.? He said, I know nothing. So, he, you know, again, and even if Khabib were to fly in, he would still need, 14 days to quarantine, which means he would fly in today and have to quarantine until the day of the fight, which is just absolutely ridiculous. So I don't think any athlete in this particular, you know, climate could be accused of ducking another athlete, you know, especially guys who know want to fight each other. But, like, right now it's just not as feasible. You know what I mean? Even guys like a Justin Gaethje, who, you know, was training on a side to you know, potentially be a replacement if a Ferguson or a Khabib pulled out. Well, you know, when these guys started getting locked down and gyms started closing, they started pulling their training back. Even in Khabib's ESPN video, to me, he looked his face looked fat as shit. I was like, yo, there's no way this guy could make weight in 2 weeks, right? He looked fat as shit today. You know, but I was like, well, you know what? All things considered, he trained, then he had to fly from San Jose to fucking Abu Dhabi. Then he had to fly from Abu Dhabi to Russia. I'm like, the guy is, like, probably having to stop and start training. So I'm like, this is just not the climate to where anyone can be accused of ducking anyone. And I'm seeing a lot of fighters call each other out, a lot of comments on social media about fighters ducking, and it's just like, this is just not the time.
No, absolutely. I 100% agree. I mean, these guys, what are you doing, road work? I mean, we have to be up close and personal. You need, you know, a couple people go. You can't just – You know, I mean, granted, you know, a couple guys could get to rather than a gym or whatever. But again, everyone's getting fined in these public things. So unless you've got a basement gym and somebody's coming over in the middle of the night, but then how good's your training camp? You know what I mean? So you can't be, you know, making weight and doing everything that you've normally been doing because all of this BS is going on. I mean, no, everything, there's uncertainty. And when, you know, a lot of people that aren't in sports don't realize, I mean, as an athlete, you're 24/7. I mean, you're eating right. You're watching your calorie input. You're doing everything correct to get the maximum performance out of your body. You're working out one to twice a day, several times a day versus cardio versus jits versus, you know, boxing, you know, depends on what you're doing. But again, so right now everyone's stuck in their house. And I tell you, you know, a gallon of milk weighs 8.5 pounds. Unless you're curling that, there ain't a whole lot unless you got a home gym, that you've got going on in your house right now, depending on, you know, Frank said earlier about cabin fever. You know, I wish I was back in the country and had a cabin. This city stuff in these condos is hell.
Yeah, because you really don't have a – yeah, you really can't move. Yeah, that's so true.
You can't be alone.
Yeah, that's very true.
Hey, Bob, you were talking about 251. Joanne Calderwood claims that she's claiming that the title – bout with she and Valentin Shevchenko. She's claiming she won the title. What's your thought on that one?
Versus Jovchenko?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I thought I saw that one. That one was I'm trying to think. You're talking Joanna Jovchenko, right? Or Jovchek?
Yes.
Okay.
Valentina Shevchenko against JoJo Calderwood.
Yeah.
Shevchenko's head and shoulders above anybody at 125. And for my money, she is the best pound-for-pound female fighter in the game today. I say that because a lot of people consider Amanda Nunes, to be the best fighter. And Valentina Shevchenko ran her very close the first time and arguably lost, but arguably won the second fight. So they've had two razor-close fights. And as we know, Amanda Nunes is significantly bigger than Valentina Shevchenko. So for my money, Shevchenko right now, pound for pound, is the best female fighter in the game.
Yeah, she looks great. Everything about her, I know, her movement all around. Yeah, everything about her looks great.
Yeah, Chris, you had talked earlier about Canelo Alvarez and Triple G. Their triple set comes up in September 12th, at the ATT Stadium down in Irving, Texas. What's your thoughts on that one? And do you think they'll be able to fill an 80,000 seat arena?
Well, you know, we all know both fighters very well. You got one aging guy. You don't know what he's got left. You know what Canelo has left. He's probably come on stronger in the last year than Triple G has, and especially taking the light heavyweight title. He does draw big, but there'll be worldwide money. So if he doesn't draw 80,000, you know, nobody's going home poor. You know, they're going to all go home with a pocket full of money. So I think I know he's a big draw, Al West, more so than Triple G. He's going to be doing, he's going to be doing all the drawing. And the crowds out there love him. Everybody will be anxious to see what's happening in the fight game and hoping that, it comes back to some normalcy after this damn virus thing and everything with it.
Sure.
I think the people are getting fed up with all this boredom. And I think that fight will draw well. It'll draw well, and I think that Canelo now is more on an equal level, if not a little bit past Triple G. I haven't seen Triple G fight in so long. I don't know what he's got left. It's going to be he's just going to jump in a ring and take on his toughest opponent without any tune-ups. That's going to be hard for him. And he's getting older, like you say. it's going to be an interesting fight. There's a lot of things that could happen, and it's going to be a good draw. It's going to be interesting. I think Triple G's got a good enough chin to go to distance, but I think now he'll get beat. I'd have to go with Canelo now, with this long layoff and all the crap that's happened. I'd have to go along with Canelo, and I've never done that again. You know.
Here we go.
It makes sense.
Can we get the hat ready? So get the crow or the hat ready?
Get the crow. Shoot the crow. Get it cooked. Somebody's going to eat one. I might have to eat one. I've done it before. So we'll see what happens. That poor Triple G, he should have had a tune-up fight. Well, maybe he don't want anybody to see that he's not the fighter he once was. Who knows what's going through his head, you know?
Yeah. Okay,
before I give you my take on the third fight, I'll address what Dr. Chris was saying about Triple G and the tune-up fight. So one of the first casualties of this COVID thing was Triple G's fight. He was supposed to fight, the guy's last name is like Smierta or something. He's you know, a European fighter. He's undefeated, but a very low knockout percentage. The guy's like 25-0 with like 6 knockouts or something. So Triple G was supposed to defend his titles as mandatory against this guy. As well as Canelo was supposed to be fighting Billy Joe Saunders. And then, of course, they agreed to fight in September. So Triple G was supposed to fight. His last fight was a fight I thought he lost against Sergey Derevchenko. Very close fight. For my money, Triple G's very best chance to beat Canelo was that very first fight. From that point on, Triple G's only getting older and Canelo's only being more solidified in his prime and just getting better. If they fight in September, I think he's going to touch Triple G up something terrible. Like Dr. Chris said, Triple G has a good chin. He takes a good shot well. It seems like combinations kind of bother him, but he takes a good shot well. But at this point in time, I see Canelo putting the hurting on Triple G, not necessarily stopping him, but beating him up pretty severely. As far as drawing 80,000, what we have to recognize is when we talk about 80,000 for a boxing match, you are only talking about the UK. That doesn't happen in the United States. We don't do that. UK, Wembley, Carl Froch, George Groves, 80,000. UK, Wembley, Josh, or even at the O2, you know, Anthony Joshua, 50, 60, 70,000. We don't do that in the United States. We don't have 80,000 people turn out for a boxing match. However, Canelo Triple G would be potentially one of the biggest fights, if not the biggest fight in boxing, even now. And coming off of this, you could really have a surge in the attendance at the live gate that could see them do numbers that are exponentially higher than numbers that are normally done over here in the States. So it's always a possibility.
Okay. Bob, you got anything to say on that one?
No, not on that one. Sorry, I'm trying out my wife's new headset. I can't hear that well, guys.
Okay. How about we got Henry Cujo calling out Dominic Cruz. What do you think about that one?
Oh, so you guys were just talking about tune-up fights. That'll segue into that one. So Cahito, a while back in like, I think December, a while back kind of made a video with like a dirty diaper skit, you know, calling out Dominic Cruz. And you know, cause he's fought a couple guys and got some belts and he's good, whatever, we'll go with that, but called him out then. And then, but then with the precautions for UFC 250, with the travel bans, for the restrictions on Aldo and stuff like that, Cruz hasn't even fought since December 2016. So he's sitting in the, kind of the sidelines. So, not sure what Cahito's doing, but he's just, again, trying to get that money, trying to stir up the fans, trying to get somebody to bite on it, trying to get The fans say, hey, yeah, we'd love to see that. Trying to make these American-based fights because of the travel bans. He knows Dana White really wants to push forward with the UFC. But again, with all the different nations and the travel bans, whether or not where a venue could be, they just don't know where they're going to be able to hold it. So Dana White's a money-making guy. He's, you know, since 2006, they took over the UFC. UFC, back when we had to explain it, is like, you know, people, I try to explain it to people, people are like, oh, that's like human cockfighting. You know what I mean? And so, you know, because boxing was pugilism, boxing was pure. Well, then, you know, Dana White put it on Spike TV and did the behind the scenes and showed the fighters were real people and went through their own things and they all had their own stories. So again, a marketing strategy, and did very, very well with it. Got everyone, got a whole new fan base and got people involved. And then, you know, again, with the fan base stuff. So any of these fighters, Dana's going to push forward. And that's why I think right now, you know, Bellator's shut down. PFL, yeah. The ones that, because they've got that kickboxing tournament that goes all year long, they've shut down or postponed everything. That's the one I took the Wounded Warriors up to on New Year's. So I respect all that. Now, Dana's a money-making guy. So he wants to keep pushing forward to try to be the first live sport back on TV to get some new fan base. I mean, imagine the coverage, the commercial cost on that. You know, people would be digging into that. Oh, boom, the first live sport since the coronavirus. I mean, that'd be a huge sell. And Dana White's a smart guy. I can see him pushing for that. But then again, how do you push fighters that have got to come from other countries? And so you've got all these American-based fighters calling each other out because they want to get on that money train too. I mean, the money has stopped, and it's bad for everybody. Fighters, you know, construction workers, you know, everybody. I mean, there's just tons of people that are getting affected by this. So Dana White's pushing forward to try to get stuff together. That's just my opinion on it. You've got these American-based fighters doing their smack talk, trying to call certain people out or recall them out, if you will, because they've been called out before, just trying to get some chatter going and be part of that card, because I know Dana White's going to probably push forward to be one of the first live sports back on television.
So here's the thing, right? You're talking about – here we are on Fighting Words Radio talking about Henry Cejudo. And I don't know if you understand how big a deal that is that we're actually even talking about Henry Cejudo. Maybe not a big deal to Henry, but a big deal that a boxing-based program that has really just introduced MMA into the framework is talking about Henry Cejudo. A little history. Henry Cejudo is an Olympic gold medalist. And when he first came into the UFC, fights at 125. And he eventually won a title at 125 and 135. But when he came into the UFC at 125, you know, he's going about his job, kicking ass, taking names. He fought the champ, who is considered, you know, one of the greatest of all time, and you know, Demetrius Johnson, Mighty Mouse. And he, you know, he was obliterated by Mighty Mouse. He got caught with a knee and was put to sleep pretty early. You know, happened like one round. Mighty Mouse destroyed him. Since then, you know, Cejudo goes back. He loses the fight to, I believe it's Jose Benavidez. But then comes back on a winning streak, wins the title. Again, he's just Henry Cejudo. Wins the title. The moment he wins the title, he starts creating a promotional character that he calls, he was calling him, actually, he was calling himself nothing at the time, but starts talking a little more trash. Henry Cejudo's the guy who kind of just kept his head down and did his job till he became the champion. And with that said, part of the history is Henry Cejudo was fighting at 125. Just like boxing, casual fans tend not to care about the lighter weight divisions. 125 is the lightest male division in the UFC. Dana White and the UFC were talking about getting rid of the division. So Henry Cejudo wins the championship, starts talking a little trash, brings a little bit of attention to the division, goes up to 135, wins the title there, starts calling himself Triple C, and starts saying the most outrageous thing. That's why he does the video with the diaper. We were just talking about Valentina Shevchenko and me believing that she's the greatest, right now, the greatest pound-for-pound woman fighter. Well, one of the things Henry Cejudo did was challenge her. He said he wanted to be the first intergender champion. So Henry Cejudo, you know, talking, you know, taking from what Bob is saying, Henry Cejudo has really taken that promotional playbook, and, it, you know, he's cringy, but it's funny. It's very tongue-in-cheek. So you don't take Henry Cejudo seriously unless you're getting in the cage with him to take his ass seriously because he's a hell of a fighter. But the fact of the matter is,
Dominick Cruz as a fourth, like Bob said, 2, 3, 4 years. He's been a commentator. So it's clever to call out Dominick Cruz because as a commentator, he's become more popular than he was even as a fighter. And he's a great fighter, maybe the greatest bantamweight, 135er of all time. But the fact of the matter is he has an injury history, and the likelihood of him coming back after that kind of layoff and fighting a guy like Henry Cejudo, Dominick Cruz would do it. But for Cejudo, it's more about marketing and promotion, especially in this time where there's not much going on in the news feed.
Well put. Right. Well said. I love having you on. Thanks for clarifying. That was perfect.
Yeah, I love him. I love, Cejudo is a guy, I like Mighty Mouse, right? When Cejudo beat him, I thought Mighty Mouse won the fight. I watched the fight. It was a close fight. I thought Mighty Mouse won it. They gave it to Cejudo. No big deal. Could have gone either way. Then Cejudo created the character, and I saw that, and I was just like, this guy's tickling me now. He's a pretty good fighter, but he's tickling me as a character. I don't take him seriously, so he's funny as hell to me.
You gotta imagine that, that Dana's behind some of that. They see the business ethic. They see what sells and this and that. It's caught between a little bit of tongue in cheek of WWE, real life realism, and fighting, and then our own sport. So again, we're vying for the money of boxing, but the only way, and then WWE gets there. But yet we're getting just destroyed physically in so many different, avenues. You might, after, hundreds of fights end up punch drunk. But, you go into one, you catch an elbow the wrong way and destroy your eye socket or get your leg busted or your ankle twisted off. You're done. You're done in one fight. So it's kind of a get paid and get out kind of thing. And so these guys that move forward and make that money and they're doing well, they see that with this get this fire under people, get the fans, do some crazy stuff, throw a bench at a bus, get into 3 car accidents, say you're John Jones, he just got let off four days of house arrest and
1 year probation, 4 days house arrest, 1 year probation, and a freaking $500 fine.
We all just got worse than that for doing nothing.
That is insane to me. And it's not his first charge. That is insane to me.
Yeah. All right, well, in that same vein, then, how about Tyrone Woolley versus Kobe Covington in UFC 249? What's your thoughts on that one?
So that's another thing that happened is that, like Bob was saying, when it looked like Khabib wasn't going to be able to get back in the USA for that fight, if that fight were to take place in the USA, all these guys came out the woodwork and said, hey, I can step in, fight, save the card. And so Tyron Woodley stepped in, and he wanted to fight Colby Covington. The only caveat with that is Tyron Woodley just had a fight pushed back against Leon Edwards. So Leon Edwards is like, dude, you're still supposed to be fighting me. You're calling out Colby Covington. And here's the thing, too. Tyron Woodley, I think, would do better. He does much better to me against Leon Edwards than he does against Colby Covington. I think Colby Covington beats him 10 times out of 10 today. I think he's just a bigger, longer Tyrone Woodley and younger at that. I think he beats Tyrone Woodley right now if they were to fight. But nonetheless, it's again, what Bob was saying. These guys are speaking up, but it's not just to necessarily take the fight, and obviously these guys got to make money, but it's also to get their name out. It's slow news feed. I read MMA news every day, and there's nothing going on except people calling each other out. You know what I mean? And that's the only way to get their names out there. And Tyron Woodley he was a champion, but he was an unpopular champion. And, so he's trying to get back to that mountaintop. He acknowledged he made some mistakes financially when he was a champion, and he wants to do it over again. So, all these guys are competing for the brass ring. But right now in this climate, a lot of it is hey, we gotta market ourselves and promote ourselves. And again, what Dana White and company's thinking is if you put on a UFC event right now, thought process is, whether it's true or not, is that that's where all eyes will be, because we're all craving some kind of sports, right? So, you know, the thought process is you bring in more casual fans than you ever did for a pay-per-view right
ever
now.
Did. You know, but I mean, right now would be a hot ticket, you know, to jump on that, you know, and from a business standpoint, you know, and ex, you know, coach and manager, like, I'd be all over it too. I mean, the fighters are just exactly like you said, trying to razz the fans so they can be the ones that Dana picks, because it'll probably happen, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And then you take some of these higher earning fighters who get pay per view points. They would definitely like Kamaru Usman, who we were just talking about. He's a welterweight champion. So usually in the champion's contract, they get pay-per-view points. So obviously he would love to step in and defend his title at a time where potentially the eyes of the whole globe are on the one sport that's going on. You know what I mean? He gets some points off of that. He's a rich man. So,
right.
You know, there's a lot of financial maneuvering going on. But the fact of the matter is we are literally 2 weeks away, and they still don't have a location. And, you know, and then once you know, and they, of course, they're talking, you know, behind the scenes, obviously. Not everything is coming out in the news. But not only do you got to get a location, but you got to get fighters in and fight. I mean, it's just a lot going on. So, I mean, the fact of the matter is it's very unlikely that this happens on April 16th. That's my opinion.
Okay. Yeah, even the Bellator president, Scott Coker, is said that he's going to postpone all the Bellators until this is all over.
PFL, Professional Fight League, canceled their upcoming season. I mean, it's just, you know, like combat sports is, you know, people look at combat sports and say, well, it's just one-on-one. You're testing two guys. It's not like basketball, football. Yeah, you know, that's how the fight is, dude. You know what I mean? That's how the fight is. But, like, the camps are so intimate. Like, training is so intimate. Dude, I trained Muay Thai for – well, I haven't been there this year for obvious reasons. But, you know, I always train Muay Thai, and, like, it's always cramped and sweaty and hot and funky in there. That's how you get down. So, like,
oh, it's worse
than sauna. Yeah, so it kills me when people are like, it's just two guys fighting. Yeah, to get to the point where it's just two guys, each guy has to go through like 50 other guys. You know what I mean? It's so
right, that's your training camp.
That.
You need those extra people to go through. But then also too, is at an upper deck, upper echelon level, you might have a boxing coach, a jiu-jitsu boxer you roll with. You might have a kickboxing, you know, Muay Thai guy.
Nutritionist.
I mean, a strength and condition. You know, when you get to that upper level, it's just not one-on-one, man. You're the race car, man. And that's why the big thing with Reebok, when they took away, you know, we lost Stitch because Stitch got his promotion from his sponsorships. And when they took away the sponsorships, we're no longer those race cars, you know. So you've got to get paid some way or another. And everyone else there is just trying to make a dollar. So I hope everyone's well, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, again, we were talking about call-outs earlier. And people, I guess, wanted to make money. And that's Demetrius Andrade. He's been calling out everybody under the sun. He called out Jamal Charles. He called out Saunders. He called out Della Vecchio, Dovchenko. You know, of any of those, who would be who would be a good matchup for him if they took it, Ty?
Any one of those fights would be great. Demetrius Andrade has had a very underwhelming career. Talented fighter. But he's never been able to secure that marquee fight. So any of those fights would be a step up from anything he's fought. He's supposed to fight Callum Smith, which would even be a step up, and he's not any of the guys you mentioned. And what I mean by step up, I'm not just talking about competition-wise, because, you know, Callum Smith would obviously be one of the better guys he's fought, and any of these guys that you just mentioned, Derevchenko, Charlo, would be better than anybody he's fought before as well. But just a step up to a marquee fight to solidify his position as a contender. He's always fighting, you know, guys a couple levels below him, and he's done that historically throughout his career. A lot of it's not his fault. He had promotional issues, which kind of started and sputtered his career at one point. But the other issue, too, is that he's a tall, rangy southpaw who doesn't bring much excitement or money to the table. And, you know, boxing's not like the UFC. It could be like MMA as a whole, but the difference is MMA has organizations and fighters fight under umbrellas. Boxers are independent contractors. Guy doesn't want to fight you, he doesn't have to fight you. And so what happens is a lot of guys are looking at Demetrius Andre, who's, you know, a 6'1", middleweight, southpaw, you know, kind of elusive fighter, and he doesn't bring much money to the table, and guys are like, you know, it's not worth that risk. Canelo Alvarez has had two or three different opportunities he could have fought Demetrius Andre. It's not a fight that his manager has moved on. Number one, he's not a big B-side seller. And number two, he's a very difficult style matchup. Again, he's a long-ranging guy. He fights at a distance, and it's kind of funky and herky-jerky in his style. And so any of those fights would be great. I don't know how he does against any of those guys, but I would just like to see him have the opportunity to fight somebody of that ilk.
What do you think, Chris?
Well, I'm listening, but I'm thinking this. I'm thinking of something else, and I want to ask Bob this question. With the brutality of the quadrangle, has any of the fighters ever got together and said, "Let's clean this up a little bit and stop maiming ourselves so that we could fight a little longer"? And because it's got to be a long time in between fights for the recovery, did the promoters squash it before it got started? Has there ever been a movement? Like, I see a guy get knocked out cold. While he's going to the floor, like a log falling, like a tree falling down, the guy's jumping on him, smashing him in the face already. Is there any movement to stop that or soften it a little bit? As it did in boxing when they were fighting on barges, and the police would come and all that, and they cleaned it up with the old Marquess of Queensberry rules to make it more not as brutal to the public. Has there ever been a movement amongst the fighters to soften things up a little bit, and maybe get a break on their side instead of the promoters, enjoying all that? All that, the fight excitement from the watching such a brutal pounding. What you would know more about it than me.
I'll come at it. I'll come at it from a couple of different angles. Okay, as a fighter, I never used any kind of negative or bad type technique, if you would, unless someone used it on me first. For example, when I fought in Sao Paulo, Brazil. Okay, that's the valet to do. So there's no boxing gloves allowed, and a lot more things are legal. So I get a guy to stomp.
Could you tell them exactly what the words valet to do means?
No, you can though.
Like, yeah, it doesn't mean anything goes, right?
I'm pretty sure you're the more the detail orientated. I'm just the knucklehead that shows up.
You,
but yeah.
So Bob was literally fighting in a style that's called anything goes. So
in that thing, you can't wear gloves, and we're in a clinch, and he starts stomping on the tops of my feet, right? So I had never used that technique, never trained that technique. So, but in that fight, I started retaliating because I wasn't just going to sit there and take it. You know what I mean? So I really think it comes down to the fighter and what they're going to do. Like, I'd rather beat somebody with my skill level on a clean surface than try to do something dirty. But I've come across some shady guys that don't, you know, back before that, you know, didn't cut their fingernails, and they're trying to cut you and scratch you in your mouth. And I've had to get stitches inside my mouth, you know, so it really comes down to the person. Now, what doesn't help is all this internet trash talking that these guys do when they start getting back and forth with each other and getting at somebody, and you get them emotional. Then these guys come out and they want to try to hurt each other. So that's kind of on them, you know. But me as an athlete, I'd never go in there and try to do something dirty or try to use a technique. Now, on the legal side of it, you know, I heard years ago, like Cerrone and a couple of, you know, great fighters and he was like, that's why I like him so much, Donald Cerrone. You know, he'd just take fight after fight, you know, with hardly, you know, 4 weeks in between or 3 weeks in between last minute fights, and just keep fighting. And I was that kind of that style. Not the best choices, okay? But he did go out of his way to try to make like a almost a union, if you will. And I didn't hear if that kind of fizzled out, but just wanted MMA guys to be covered medically, because when this stuff first started, I mean, I've been at amateur events all around the United States, Canada, different places, and you know, you show up and a promoter gets you there, and they might give you, you know, some travel money or something to get there, and then you get there and all of a sudden you get, you know, a huge gash in your above your eye. And they're like, hey, Whale, thanks for the fight. See you later. And there's no nothing. There's no coverage. You have to go as an amateur fighter and hopefully have some insurance to get yourself taken care of, or you've got some doctor bills. So now things have really leveled out to where, like, I know my wife was one too. When she was a doctor, she would stay after and make sure everyone get, you know, expert care and get stitched up and, you know, taken care of and you know, making sure people, promoters use their insurance, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, good. But make sure they get taken care of.
I think when you talk about, you know, Dr. Chris, you know, you talk about the brutality of MMA, and a lot of other people speak of the brutality of MMA. And, you know, obviously, you know, boxing has been around significantly longer. But the fact of the matter is there's never been an MMA-related death in a fight. It's happened in boxing, obviously. And you know, I could be missing one, and there may have been a death or two on a smaller MMA promotion, but nothing in any of the major promotions. But even if there's been a death or two in the smaller promotions, we're talking about in the whole history of MMA, in that same time frame, there have been significantly more deaths in boxing. I think the brutality, the reason why people look at MMA as so brutal, it comes down to the small gloves, the knees, and the elbows. The usage of knees, elbows, small gloves, they allow for cuts. They cause cuts. And so in an MMA fight, you're more likely to see nasty gashes and blood than you are a boxing match. But the fact of the matter is, one of the reasons why you don't have the deaths or the brain traumas to this point in MMA that you have in boxing is because a lot of times, and I hate it as a fight fan, but it is what it is. You'll watch an MMA fight, a guy takes a good shot and goes down. And yeah, the guy's on his way down to drop the hammer fist, but basically, as soon as he's on his way down, if he looks somewhat out, the ref is calling the fight. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. In boxing, you get to recover from a knockdown. And so what's happening in boxing is you're getting that concussion, and then you're kind of like coming back and fighting with it again, you know? We see this all the time. You can tell when guys – in fact, a lot of people thought Anthony Joshua lost that fight to Andy Ruiz because he got caught – got a concussion and fought the rest of the fight with a concussion. So that's what happens. In boxing, you get knocked down, you get the brain trauma, you're allowed a few seconds to recover and come back fighting. In MMA, when that happens, the fight is basically over. So I understand why people feel MMA is so brutal. It's the usage of weapons that are unconventional in boxing and weapons that are designed to cut, and if used a certain way, obviously designed to kill and maim, but the same thing with the fist too. But I think the biggest difference in MMA is those weapons cause a lot of bloodshed. And so if you see two guys bleeding all over each other, it looks so brutal. If you see two guys punching the shit out of each other with gloves on, well, then, you know, it doesn't look as brutal, but it's kind of more brutal because, once a guy gets knocked out, if he gets up by the count of 10 and looks like he continues, he's going to continue. That doesn't happen in MMA.
Ty, I can't tell you how much I'm impressed, and thank you for being on it. And to elaborate on that, Dr. Chris, yeah, because we used to say in MMA, yeah, we get the stitches, and you'll see the blood because of the cuts, and you might get, you know, a shin busted, you know, blocking it or checking a kick. So we have that, but we actually felt bad for the boxers, and our thing was because they're getting hit, you know, 90% of their shots to the head. We have so many different ways to beat each other. You know, you can get out with not a scrape on you. You go in there, shoot in, get a rear naked choke. But anyway.
All right, now we're joined tonight by Sheriff-elect Paul Fearn, Sarasota County. Paul's a MMA fan from way back, and so I now have four knowledgeable fight people on, and I have a question for. I'm going to start with our historian, our boxing historian. Dr. Chris, there was a boxer back in the 50s. He had 24 wins and 0 losses. His name was Dino Crocetti. He fought under the name of Dino Crocetti. Do you know who that is?
You know, I should know it,
on,
being Italian.
Yeah, he's a,
I should know it, but I don't remember him. we had Crocettis around here, but I don't remember him, Frank.
Yeah.
Where was
okay.
he, 24 and 0?
In
what
in the
state?
50s.
Well, what state was
he
fighting
in? He fought in Ohio, and he fought in Vegas, and Nevada, and he fought in California.
Hey, Butch.
Yeah, well, he didn't fight in Pennsylvania. He didn't fight in Pennsylvania. Well, I would have remembered.
Yeah, he was born and raised in Ohio. Go ahead. Go ahead, Ty.
I was going to say, why don't you give Dr. Chris a weight class to help him out?
No. He's supposed to be the historian here now. God damn it. We
put
this
on
the
website.
My areas are
confined.
Out of weight to heavyweight.
I don't know who the hell was fighting in Spokane, Washington. You know what I mean? That's local. I mean, I know Crocetti family. They were all contractors. That's the only thing I know. When you mentioned Crocetti, all over there, they built apartments and so forth. But I never heard of a Crocetti that was a fighter. I didn't. He might have fought, like you say, in Ohio. He might have come out of a place like Oklahoma. It seems like Oklahoma, you can fight once a week and run up a 30-0 record, and you haven't fought anybody anybody knows. You got me. Is Dino going to come on?
I wasn't even born, so no.
No.
Before my time.
Dino, give me some notables. Give me a notable that you fought.
He changed his name after the ring, and he picked up a partner. His name was Lewis.
Lewis.
Mm-hmm.
First name or last name?
That's his last name. The guy's last name was Lewis. And
you got me again.
His name from Crocetti to Martin on the advice of Bud Abbott. It was Dean Martin.
Dean Martin used to box?
What?
Yeah. He was 24-0.
Wow.
Yeah.
And he went by Dino Crocetti, huh?
That's his freak name.
Well, that was his name, but he was from Steubenville.
Yeah,
Steubenville was right over the Pennsylvania border.
You know him. Yeah,
we
give the answer. You know what the hell did you do? Look him up.
I got it down. I want to see the guys that fought. I want to see the guys
that's
must have been in the war.
You talk about taking shots. I think you take a couple shots.
I remember the name now, but I mean, he was from Steubenville, Ohio. It's right over the Pennsylvania border. But I don't remember him fighting. I know that Bob Hope had some fights. George Raft had some fights. George Raft was a fighter. I can name a few, but Victor McLaughlin was the greatest fighter of all the actors. Were you going to tell me Dino Crocetti had 20 fights?
Yeah, 24 fights.
No, he's telling you Dean Martin had 24 fights.
And a neighbor down the street.
That's what he's telling you.
I mean, come on. Dino was, I got a survivor. Well, it's too late. Too late. I won't run into him. You know.
Well, talking about fights, you have a big one coming up August 18th. One of the questions that seems to be coming up is that across the nation, we're down in a lockdown. Can you I don't want to call it a lockdown. Let's just call it sequestering shelter in place. Can you explain to our listeners what the 10 to 5 curfew is?
The 10 to 5 curfew?
Yes.
Well, Sarasota County doesn't have one yet. I think Manatee implemented that 11 to 4 or something. But you can't go out only do essential things, going to the gas station, you know, grocery store, things like that. But just can't be out and about. The virus can travel. They're finding out at nighttime just as well as it can during the day. The daytime kind of they're finding out the heat kind of suppresses it a little bit. But at nighttime, it's airborne, actually. From what I hear.
And what about supplying PPE to the troops? We dedicated tonight's show to Shannon Bennett from Broward County, and I know you. I saw your Facebook page, and you dedicated your Facebook page to him today. Is there enough to go around for the county?
There's not enough to go around, and it's sad to hear that. And I didn't know Deputy Bennett, but once a brother, always a brother. I retired a couple years ago, but you know, once a brother, always a brother. But from the guys that I know that are still working, they don't have any PPE equipment. Maybe a mask here or there, but they don't have any distributed to them for, you know, daily use. You know, throughout their shift, which is I don't think that's you're setting them up for failure. And even the hospitals down here don't even have enough equipment.
Right.
You know,
It's
shocking that they don't, first responders don't have access to protective equipment. I just don't understand that.
That is ludicrous. That is absolutely ludicrous.
You know, and I read today that, he's not, several more died today, Frank, in Florida. It's crazy. I mean, granted, you know, they think that they're the first ones to go there. You would think they would be the ones that get it first, but you never think that that's going to happen, you know, and now it's starting to happen. It's scary.
And thank God that Sarasota County hasn't had one yet, or anybody that's even tested positive. But
you don't send troops on the front line without weapons, you know? That makes no sense. You don't send troops on the front line without gear.
Correct.
Like, makes absolutely no sense to me.
Yeah, I mean, you can't even give your guys hand sanitizer. I mean, I don't understand. I don't.
Right.
That is insane.
Yeah.
And, you know, the one thing I like also want the people to know is that you're doing an awful lot in the community, quietly in the community. I know you work with first responders today. You were out there, and you want to explain that, and then what you're doing on Tuesday.
Yeah, the campaign is the campaign is the campaign. But I'm out. I own a business, a small business that's been in town for 34 years, and it's chicken wings. You know, and we just today we went out and fed the firemen. We got, and I know being a former first responder, how hard it is to find a meal that you can trust from somebody walking up to the fire station handing you a bunch of cookies. Most of the time we were apprehensive, you know, on taking those because we didn't know where it came from. But I walked up with, you know, with the Wings and Weenie shirt on and gave them 100 wings this afternoon for one of the fire stations. Yeah, we're going to do more than that station. We're going to hit every station north of Bee Ridge Road on Saturdays. So and then Tuesday, I'm planning on going to Meals on Wheels and working in the kitchen, just bagging food and helping them people out. They're short staffed as well. So I'm just trying to do, you know, stuff that we can do to help out. You know, it's got nothing to do with the campaign or anything like that.
Right.
And I ain't going to promote it that way because that's not right. But
yeah,
that's what we're doing.
The other thing people should know is that during the emergency down in Puerto Rico, you organized and sent over a ton of air generators and equipment and clothing, food, and everything. And you want to tell people about that too?
Yeah, a buddy of mine owns a business in town, Moore's Inc., and he organized. Actually, Lonnie organized five boats of his buddies that had big enough boats to get from Florida to the Bahamas, and we loaded up. I think it was over 100 generators and clothing and toilet paper and bottles of water and diapers, the things that they were actually needing. They were, you know, requesting diapers and bottles and stuff like that for the children. So So we loaded those up and sent them over there. We couldn't get over there as fast as we wanted to because the waves were still big, like 8 days after the hurricane. But sent those over there. And again, you know, it's just small businesses, you know, getting together and helping every, you know, helping out as much as we can. Didn't realize that was a, you know, it's kind of a short boat ride over there. It's kind of shocking that it was that.
Right.
That didn't, you don't think that way, you know?
Right, right. And the I guess the other thing that people have, don't know about how you've planned to revamp some of the detective bureaus, some of the squads to help out the elderly and the kids with kids with problems.
Yeah, some of the services that they've offered to certain people in the county have been taken away through the last, I guess, quarter of this administration's crimes against the elderly are increasing. Fraudulent stuff, you know, people take advantage of the elderly. You need a new roof and, you know, people that aren't licensed or insured go down there and take advantage of them. That becomes a health and safety issue because when the insurance companies don't want to, you know, insure them because they had an unlicensed contractor to do the roof, then they're going to have a heart attack or a stroke. You know, I mean, it rolls downhill. So unlicensed contracting, stolen vehicles, crimes against the elderly, all those will be back up and running full force. Community policing will be back. Just the things that everybody takes for granted that were this agency was known for community policing back in the day under Sheriff Balkwell. And somehow it's just kind of gone away, and it's sad, but it's true. It's happening. You're living it.
Great. Well, we want to thank you for being on. We want to wish you the very best of luck in your quest to, and
thank you.
Guys, got any questions for the sheriff?
Yeah, I got one. Well, it seems like the best time to go out would be late at night. There's no traffic on the road, no people, less human contact. I mean, why? Whose idea was it to stop travel at night? I mean, they're trying to say the virus moves better at night. I never heard of that.
Yeah, I don't know if it moves better at night, but I know the humidity and the heat keeps it down. So I don't know if they're just wanting people to stay in, not to have, you know, contacting with anybody else. But
you gotta let them out sometime. I mean, Jesus Christ, you gotta go get gas.
Yeah,
you can't go get gas.
I mean, they're not. I don't think they're gonna go to the point of. Yeah, they're not going to the point of taking people to jail for it. You know, they're not taking people to jail for it. They're just going to educate. I think they're going to, if they come across somebody, they're going to educate them, per se, on, you know, follow the rules and that kind of stuff. I don't ever see it getting to the point where they actually arrest somebody for it unless they're, you know, unless they push the envelope.
They are to enforce that rule. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's just an opportunity for them to educate people. So, I see both veins of it. You know, it is what it is. I'm looking out on the road right now. We're at work. We're shutting down, and there's nobody out on the road. It's kind of scary.
No, that's same up here.
I was in Philly at Center City. I was in Center City, Philly at lunchtime like last Monday. We were just shooting some pickup shots. All we can shoot is architecture. It was absolutely dead down there.
Did you see?
Like,
see the pictures they showed of Las Vegas after they about a week and a half ago in Vegas? There was nobody out. It was freaky looking.
Yes. So eerie out there.
Yeah, it was crazy. But you know, it's different times, man. Nobody's ever gone through this, so
no,
it's scary.
Nope.
Scary. You know, when Tony Baselli got hitchhiking.
Whatever happened to hitchhiking?
Remember, that's a hell of a question.
My buddies would all leave Marcus Hooks to start bumming around to go down to Norfolk. Go back to their base.
Such a random question.
You'd die out there. You'd be walking 300 miles. Nobody'd pick you up.
Well, nobody'd pick you up.
Not even at night.
No.
Not a hitchhiker. Hell, they run over you now. Shit, that guy.
Yep.
I made a living hitchhiking. I hitchhiked everywhere. Now, you're thinking of, holy Christ.
I have a... I have a beautiful wife, and we always banter back and forth, you know, getting in little spats on the road. And I'll say, I'll pull over right now and let you out. She's like, I'll get a ride. I'll beat you home. I said, that's not fair. You can't use those to your advantage. You can't do that.
We want to thank you for being on tonight, and we wish you the very best in your quest.
Keep up the good work, too, Paul. Keep up the good work, sir.
Thank you, guys.
Yes,
I appreciate
sir.
It. You guys take care.
Okay.
Have a good night. Bye-bye.
All right, take care. I'll see you later on tonight.
Okay, bye-bye.
Okay. Guys, we're up against our clock here. In fact, I extended it an extra 15 minutes, so we're up one more minute. But, Bob, thank you very much for all your preparation again. You always do a great job. Chris, except for falling off the thing until you found Steuben, Ohio.
Dean Corsetti, I want a second shot at him. Dean Martin,
now
I think
you know him. Now you know him.
Now I know who he is.
Now you know him.
I'll have another one for you next
week.
Yeah,
good old Steubenville.
He got you. This week.
Oh, boy.
He got you, Dr. Chris. He got you.
Yeah. Have a good week, Chris. I'll get that stuff up to you.
All right.
Monday.
Take care, guys. See you next week, guys.
All right.
Okay, bye now.
Thanks, Ty. Thanks ever so much again for being on, and you always have bring so much to the program, both through your knowledge over the years, and you're able to break down everything. And we always put that in our breakdown on the thing. Ty will bring us up to date on the business end of the fight zone, as well as the daily updates. So that's always been on our webpage. So we appreciate you and Zito and your whole family. You always done a great job for us and always been there for us when we needed you. So, ladies and gentlemen, these programs are brought to you each and every night of the week in grateful appreciation to the men and women of the United States Armed Forces and the men and women of Police and Fire Services. When you're out there and you see somebody in uniform, please make sure they know that you know that they're there. This is very tough times for those in uniform. These programs are dedicated to two people that are very special to our hearts. That's Coach Mel and Bob. The programs are also dedicated to those who've lost their lives in the line of duty. Deputy Robert Anthony Carroll, Patrolman David Curtis, Patrolman Jeffrey Kolkep, Sergeant Thomas Batinger, Patrolman Jeffrey Yazowitz, Detective Randy Bell, Detective Ricky Childress, San Diego Officer Mike Henner, Lieutenant Mike Zerba, Newcastle County Police, Patrolman Anofo Crispin, Lakeland PD, Chief Al Hogle, Longboat Key Police Department, Chief Jimmy Ford, Wilmington Fire Department, Highway Patrolman Alonzo Moses, Philadelphia Highway Patrol, Highway Patrolman Brian Lazaro, Philadelphia Highway Patrol. Highway Patrolman Brian Murphy, Plymouth Township PA Highway Patrol, Lieutenant Bob Murray, Philadelphia Fire Department, Sergeant Mike Wilson, Charlotte County Sheriff's Office, Deputy Chief Mike Godwin, Philadelphia Fire Department, Deputy Jonathan Scott Pine, Orange County Sheriff's Department, Deputy Robert Germain, Windermere, Florida Police Department, Trooper Chelsea Richards, Florida Highway Patrol, Lieutenant Joyce Craig Lewis, Philadelphia Fire Department, Patrolman Charlie Condit, Tarpon Springs Police Department, Hillsborough Deputy Sheriff Charlie Kotlow, Corporal James O'Connor, Philadelphia Police Department, Delaware State Trooper Sergeant Rodney Bond, Captain Chris Leach, Wilmington Fire Department, Lieutenant Jerry Ficus, Wilmington Fire Department, Lieutenant Ardeth Hope, Wilmington Fire Department, Special Inspector Vinny Galacci, FDLE, Delaware State Trooper Corporal Stephen Boward, Kissimmee Patrol Officer Matt Baxter, Kissimmee Sergeant Sam Howard, Captain Matt Laterno, Philadelphia Fire Department, Deputy Bill Gentry, Highlands County Sheriff's Department, Deputy Clay Gerber, Clay County Sheriff's Department, Deputy Natalie Corona, L.A. County Sheriff's Department, Deputy April Rodriguez, Pasco County Sheriff's Department, Officer Robert McEachin, Biloxi, Kentucky Police Department, Trooper Joe Bullock, Florida Highway Patrol, latest entry, Deputy Shannon Bennett, Broward County Sheriff's Office. My brothers and sisters, though you may be 10-7 at this point in time, and sometime we'll be 10-10 at the table of the Lord. Until that time, may the rose rise up to meet you. May the rains be always at your back. The winds be always at your back. May the rains fall softly on your fields and the sun shine lightly on your face. Until we meet again, may the good Lord keep you and your families always in the hallow of his hand. Good night. God bless. Have a great week.
Shemalek ma yilama Shemahezah yilma Suna shene vorat fet Hakuig gen ma yilma
Bob, we love you and we miss you.